This episode is presented by Shaxbury Cider.
Hello, and welcome to A Hungry Society. I'm Korsha Wilson, and this is a show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. Today's guest is Rose Traor, a chef, world traveler, and graduate of Le Cordon Bleu. Rose also trained under Chef Daniel Hume at the Nomad Hotel and worked with the Make It Nice team based here in New York City. But he's also lived in Washington, D.C., Côte d'Ivoire, London, and Paris. He is the founder of Rose LLC, executing private events, pop-up dinners, and curated dining experiences all over the world. Rose! Welcome to A Hungry Society.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I am so happy you're here too. So I didn't cover like everything that you have done in your career, like in your intro. It's kind of impossible to like put all of these different things together. So when people ask you, Rose, what do you do? What do you tell them?
I tell them I'm a private chef. Now it's said so bluntly on purpose because, you know, I just want people to dig in, do their research and know how far out, you know, of a caliber, you know, I'm able to like maintain myself and represent myself as a private chef. And so I'll say I'm a private chef between New York and London.
New York and London. Yeah.
And usually it's where the client takes me. It could be Amsterdam, it could be Venice, or even Copenhagen, which was my most recent trip, which was outstanding.
I saw the Instagram stories. They were great. I was very jealous.
When you have things to post, you just have to, you know. It's like you might have 12 stories, but it's all good, or more, but... It's all part of the adventure.
So I read that there was actually a health scare in your life when you were 14 or so that led you to food. What happened?
So I was born with a heart condition, and you know, as a newborn, I had to go straight into surgery. And the whole story behind that was my one side of my heart was working harder than the other side, which caused it to, you know, make it weaker. And so when I was 14, I had to have another surgery because there was, you know, some leakage. And at that point, you know, you kind of know what's going on, but you don't. And all I knew was that I was in recovery and it was very painful. How could I make myself worthy, if you would say, because I'm not doing anything. I'm on the couch and I just am like, all right, I'm at home. Maybe I'll just start cooking. And through that, you just slowly find out, you know, about ingredients, and especially with my dad wanting us to know about our culture. He would always have, you know, a full dinner served and explain to us these dishes. And so when you're recovering, you just test out those dishes. You try to impress your siblings because you're, you know, watching them, or even your parents. And that was my like first interaction with food, if you would say.
That's okay. So there's so many things in that story of, you know, at 14 years old being like, oh, I wanna. You use the word worthy.
Yeah.
Like you wanted to contribute in some way to like your family. You didn't want to just stay on the couch.
Not even just, it's bigger than that, because you have to understand that when I couldn't play sports to my fullest ability, like to the fullest, you know, run around and I would always run out of breath. And so that would discourage like, you know, any kid because he's not able to keep up with his friends or for a longer period of time. You know, I still enjoyed it, but I now I couldn't do anything because I was recovering. So.
And you mentioned learning about food from your dad. Where's your dad from?
My dad's from the Ivory Coast. Mm. My mom is from Paris, and that was his number one thing in the house. Learn everything, you know, at school, but here you're also going to learn about, you know, your culture, your roots, everything beautiful about the land that he's from, I'm from. And one way of showing us that was through food.
Hmm. Yeah, you traveled quite a bit when you were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so you recently cooked at the Beard House. You did a dinner there.
That was
so congratulations.
Fun. Thank you.
That's
Thank
a
you.
Big, like, a lot of chefs have that on their, like, bucket list. Mm-hmm. But your food and your menus kind of reflect some of the travels that you did. But I want to hear in your own words, like, how do your, like, formative years traveling, like, impact how you cook?
It's impacted me drastically because the world is so big. Like, you know, it's as obvious as that is. It's like you leave your comfort zone, wherever that is, and you just decide to just throw yourself on a different soil. And by doing that, you learn everything from, you know, how people communicate, how people eat, how they grow things. And you just have no choice but to take all of that in and humble yourself to where, in my situation, I humble myself enough to, like, want to learn even more to where I could take all that knowledge and create a menu, create a dish, because the way that they cured, you know, like seafood or, you know, seafood or protein in a country was, like, you know, outstanding. So if I had this technique with that technique from, you know, Paris or Cuba, if you would say, it will really bring out this dish.
Mm.
And so in a way, you're kind of doing your part as far as introducing different cultures to each other. And that's the way that I do it, by introducing different techniques, different styles, and kind of like, you know, it's speaking in silence.
Mm.
And that's really my, like, way of cooking.
It's your way of, like, communicating the things that you've seen without writing an article or a book.
Exactly. And you're able to really taste that. It's very, very hard to not taste, like, you know, like a dish that has all of that energy and knowledge without you being like, hey, like, I actually remember trying this when I was in Copenhagen, this flavor profile, but I could also pick this up because I was in Florence.
Hmm.
And so it's food itself, as we know, it's mind-blowing. It's even amazing when you're able to manipulate it. And that's the wonderful part.
Is there a place that you go to travel-wise, like, over and over again, like a city or a country that, like, constantly inspires you?
Hands down, London. But usually my tour, if you would say, is London, Amsterdam, Copenhagen.
Okay, those in that order?
Yep.
Okay.
Every time. It's like I make it a mission to, you know, continue to keep the relationships and just, it's crazy what's going on out there.
And how long are you spending in each place?
At least two. London, when I go to London, I'm there for, it's like my base in Europe.
Mm.
And so when I'm going to like Copenhagen or Amsterdam, I'll do like 2 weeks. 2 weeks at a time.
Where are you going, if you don't mind sharing?
Restaurant-wise.
Where are the hotspots that you're going to that we need to
So in know Amsterdam,
about?
You have Chef Frick, which has a restaurant called Maris Piper. I did a pop-up with him where we did like a 5-course, and it was like, you know, a small film that I put together, and it's out there now.
You put together a film about the pop-up?
Oh,
wow.
The pop-up. So, you know, when I say, like, I'm a private chef, it's so bluntly, but one of the missions behind everything that I represent is highlighting amazing chefs around the world that do not have that spotlight on a global stand. And also, sometimes I just feel like people in the States need to know these people, you know, as chefs, as cooks, you work at these amazing restaurants, but it's an argument. You really don't know the person putting in that work day in, day out, like every day, and taking a toll on their life. And, you know, being a cook myself and working at some amazing restaurants, which I appreciate the door, the rest, and, you know, the community. But I took it upon myself to I simply want to highlight those, my peers down there, you know.
That's pretty intense that you're, like, also making art to go along with the pop-ups that you're doing, like... So first, where can listeners find the movie that you made?
You could find it on my Instagram, Rose Traore, R-O-Z-E-T-R-A-O-R-E. You could find it on the website, chefrose.com. Actually, Munchies published it, and Munchies Amsterdam. It's written in, it's in Dutch, but the film itself is in English because I'm not there yet.
Right, you're working on it, but you're not there yet.
I know Dunkerville, that's just, you know, thank you, but other than that, that's about it.
That's amazing. So if someone asked you to describe your food in a couple of words, would you be able to do that? Do you feel like it's kind of bigger than that because of your travels?
I feel like if you were to ask me, what kind of cuisine do you cook? See, when people ask me that, I'm always trapped because it's like, I just do it. And it's, as I mentioned before, it's literally involving different cultures together. And just like, you know, it's a bigger, it's for me to just say, my style is just French. It's like, you know, that's just not me. I would much rather involve everything that I've learned around my journeys and put that in there. But if you want to know, Rose, how can you describe your food? It would be exquisite, experimental, and simple. Simplicity, you know. And those... some would say they don't even go together, you know. How can you get exquisite with simplicity? How can you, but that whole, all of those three elements, the one that captures it the most is like finesse. Finesse is the umbrella. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Finesse is a chef word that, like, chefs are so obsessed with that word.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, I've seen tattoos of it.
I haven't thought that far about it, but it's just you got to finesse it. Like, you know, you just got to, the other one is crusher.
Like crusher?
Yeah, like
I haven't heard that one.
Are you crushing it today?
Or oh, like, okay. Yeah,
you're
going
to crush it. Like that's a very used term.
Yeah. And chefs do love to say that too.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you've done quite a bit in your culinary career already. Where do you see yourself about 10 years from now? Like, what are your, like, wildest dreams for your career?
So my wildest dreams, it's all a buildup, but it would be to continue to have a strong house, like a fashion house, a platform that... represents myself to the fullest, as far as, you know, one person that has me and that inspires me constantly is, you know, Anthony Bourdain and what he was doing. I feel like I have that presence and that energy inside me that in a way it's like a representative of the culinary industry, and I want to highlight everything that I love about the industry, maybe hate about the industry, my adventures, and just put that out to the public and the universe. And so you could say continuing to have, you know, a rockin' TV show And really, that's like the biggest thing. A TV show having a proper line, and most importantly, having a platform for other chefs to join and be represented in such a unique way. You know, when you're talking about whether it's compensation, whether it's just acknowledgement, whether it's, you know, just being clueless about what you're getting into as far as, you know, a young chef, this platform is able to provide that. And having, and just continuing to just have, be that guy, like, you know, hey, who's that guy that is able to execute? Who's the hottest chef in the world right now? That's who I want to, that's who I want to cook my dinner. Like, you know, it could be from the White House to the hottest parties, whatever. Like, you know, it's just, it's a whole community. It's a whole platform. It's an umbrella within itself that
so
I want
to
create.
So you still want to continue the, to be in the event space, but like very focused on culinary and like promoting chefs who are doing really interesting work.
Yep, chefs that are doing interesting work, and sharing everything from my adventures on a, you know, ideally whether that's a TV platform, books, and yeah, really do something. What Anthony did was impeccable, but I want to do something that
is all about
me,
that
speaks to me, and yeah, exactly. And I feel like that it's something that obviously it's a hard level to, you know, maintain because of the, you know, caliber that he took it, but it's definitely something that I know that I can be of use to the youths, to the, to any demographic, you know.
Would you ever want to have your own brick-and-mortar restaurant space?
So I would want to have a small, like maybe 30 people.
Okay.
You know, 30 people seating. Very exclusive, very...
Where in the world would you want that?
Copenhagen is beautiful. It's just so... It's like, you're kind of like... It's just beautiful and it's like... underrated, which is great because you, like, you want that privacy if you think about it. But I would do one in New York, and but first it would be New York, Copenhagen, I would say.
And you mentioned fashion houses as one of your kind of inspirations for building a foundation for your career, and I purposefully didn't talk about your other background in your intro because I think it's I really wanted to focus on your culinary work, but it seems like the travels that you did working with fashion brands as well has influenced and impact how you cook even.
How I cook, how I just maintain myself. The fashion industry is wild. It's crazy.
Can you just drop, like, tell me who you've modeled for, because the list is crazy. Just brag for a second.
I mean, I've done things for GQ, Vogue, Men About Town, Greg Lauren, which is Ralph Lauren's nephew, and, like, you have your Macy, your, what else?
Oh, just those. And you're like, I mean, there's others, but...
it's always hard to, like, get a full list. But, you know, the fashion industry is fucking wild. It teaches you from a young stage these, like, journeys that you just, like, go on. And you're just... You have no choice but to, like, mature very fast. Same as the cooking world, you know? But... it really opened my mind up. It really showed me how to hustle from a networking perspective, because that's something that it's like everything. It's great that you're an amazing chef, but this whole thing that I'm building is bigger than cooking. You know, it's bigger. You're going to be a great chef and just be some just stuck in the kitchen without showing anything off that they've learned, you know, to the world, you know. It's like, but for me, it's like, it's bigger than that. It's just networking, building, knowing how to, you know, present myself to people. And I feel like the fashion has really helped me with that.
So you mentioned a couple times about young chefs and wanting to be an example. What advice would you give any young chefs who are listening to this or who follow you?
Yeah. Be very brave. It's a crazy world. I've been fortunate enough to do well on my own, but still, when I go into like and work at a, you know, step foot in a 2-3 Michelin star restaurant, like I get chills. And I personally, it's chills from just how unique that environment is. It's chill how many eyes are on you. It's chill how it gets scary, it gets real, you know, like, but you just have to face your fears, have to be brave, and you know, you're gonna be able to go home. Like, it's not, the day's gonna end eventually, no matter how hard it gets. And just go to sleep, wake back up, and push.
I wonder how many young Black chefs have you seen in those environments, like in the 2 and 3.
It's pretty rare. And the ones you know already, you have Eduardo, you have who else? There's this guy, he's in DC based, you know.
Oh, him. Yeah, Kwame.
Kwame, mm-hmm. Yeah. And to be fair, that's all I know. Those are like the only chefs that I like, you know. Would be like, yeah, like they face their demons.
Face their demons. And, wait, yeah. Are Michelin stars demons?
No, it's just how intense that the culinary scene is. It's like it gets real, you know, like
yeah.
And there's no hiding that. It's just and to take on all that pressure to overcome it and feel great about that accomplishment. And essentially it is the, you know, it's the demon.
Where can listeners learn more about you?
Again, Rose Traore on Instagram. My website, chefrose.com, usually has a lot of updates. And yeah.
Awesome. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more with Chef Rose.
Definitely.
This episode is brought to you by Shaxbury Cider, who believe cider can be daring, complex, and eminently drinkable. Located in Vergennes, Vermont, Shaxbury make a broad offering of ciders, from the bright and fruity rosé to inventive small-batch wild apple fermentation. Each fall, Shaxbury takes to the hills of Vermont to forage for the wild and forgotten fruit that make up their Lost Apple Project. Shaxbury, producer of the first American-made Pet Nat cider, continues to experiment every year with limited edition ciders designed to spotlight locally foraged fruit. To learn more, visit Shaxbury.com or follow them on Instagram at Shaxbury.
All right, so we are back with Chef Rose. Now it's time to get personal. We've talked about fashion. We've talked about your culinary work. When people ask you where you grew up, I know you grew up all over the place, but where do you say?
I say Seattle. I say between Seattle, Ivory Coast. I typically say Seattle, Ivory Coast, Paris, because, you know, I did 3 years in Ivory Coast, 1 year in Paris, and then the rest was in Seattle. Like, your junior high, your high school was all in Seattle, and I went to college in Portland.
Did you go out to eat in those places?
See, at that time, I knew nothing about the culinary world. It was more like I just graduated high school and I need to find a career for myself. And the closest thing that I could think of was just food, but no one in my family actually knew the whys. No one, the finesse wasn't there, if you would say. It was just good, like comfortable food. Mm-hmm. And I just dived into it.
What did your family make when you were growing up?
My dad would make peanut sauce. My dad would do a lot of braised fish. Mm. He would cook this dish. It's like, it's called achique. It's like kind of like couscous. And so that would go along with the braised fish. And there would be gumbo sauce. My stepmom was from Guam. And so she used to make her stews, like your chicken adobo. And so growing up, it was just a lot to take in a positive way. And just, you take what you want to take out of it. And for me, it led to, a good road 10 years later.
Mm-hmm. I was actually, when you were talking about the food your dad cooked, like it reminded me, I was talking to Chef Pierre Thiam, mm-hmm. Who's from Senegal, and he was saying that
Chepjin,
like,
yep.
Yeah, there's yep. like all these very, very literal connections.
And that's another one when you were talking about African-American chefs. Yeah,
yeah, like...
African chefs, yeah.
Yeah, like he was talking about when he had gumbo for the first time, and he was like, I was back in Senegal.
Exactly.
Like, it's the same thing, mm-hmm. pretty much. If
gumbo is like... It's just, okra is just an amazing, ingredient to just use. And it's not used as often in your, like I can't remember the last time I had gumbo in America, like at these Michelin restaurants or whatever.
Yeah. I think it, this is going to sound shady, but I think it's because a lot of people don't know how to utilize okra properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I think people are always like, oh, it's slimy and this and that. And it's like, you can manipulate it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Good.
I think the same thing with gumbo. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard to find a good gumbo. So a lot of people don't do it.
Just don't use too much.
Right. So when you were in Paris, did you eat at home as well?
Yeah, I ate at home, but that was like, before even middle school. Mm. Like, I went to Paris and Ivory Coast at such a young age, probably like 7. Mm. And so I don't even remember. I definitely didn't go to any Michelin restaurants or I just remember being fed well and taken care of. And that was about it. But my taste for, how far food goes adapted in like 2009, like when I went to Le Cordon Bleu. And even at that time, I didn't know much about it. It was, to be fair, like maybe 5 years. It's a huge index, when you talk about culinary, which, I always project this, I never want to come across as if I know everything. Because I'm on a constant journey that I love and that I am riding my own ship. But sometime it doesn't hurt to take a pivot and learn from your peers, your family, and speaking on that, I'll be joining the 11 Madison Park team next month. And that solely is to just continue to build that knowledge that I continue to project to people and continue to refine my palate. And at the end of the day, involving myself with other amazing young chefs, which is essentially the people that I want to highlight.
And, 11 Madison Park has been named the best restaurant in the world. Yeah. So that also helps.
Yeah.
So can you think of a restaurant experience? It doesn't have to be, Michelin rated. It can be from any time in your life where you were like, oh, where it made you think about like food a little bit differently or dining, or can you remember an experience like that?
Where it was like mind blowing. I would say I had like one of my friends, he has a restaurant in Copenhagen, Christian, and the restaurant is called El Buco. Now, the food that they deliver there, it's just mind-blowing. As far, it's like an Italian joint. Kind of looks like, you know, where we're at.
It looks like we're burritos.
Kind of like, just like very cozy, rusty, and the flavor profile that they were using, I was just like, amazing. I did a small segment with him and Christian Bowman at 108, which will be coming out soon. The two different, you know, short films, but the food at 108, as everyone knows, Christian did some time at Noma, and that food was like impeccable. I'm so in love with ice cream that they even have a dish with like ice cream and caviar.
Ice cream and caviar.
Yeah.
What's the flavor of the ice cream?
It was vanilla.
It's vanilla ice cream and caviar?
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it's not like Haagen-Dazs vanilla.
Hell no.
It's like
vanilla, like, you know, beans, just like, you know. I never had it. I would never think to, you know, combine those two. But when you think about it, you do the same with a dulce de leche.
Mm-hmm.
With fleur de sel, like salt. So that's
salt
ice
and sweet.
That's like,
yeah, I'm not sweet.
That's
some, like,
sweet. Yeah. That's your cream, which is, you know, the milk. You have your dairy. You have your sweet, your caramel, and then you have your salt. In this occasion, it's your dairy and salt, which is the caviar. And so it's still, you know, it's the way that he thought about that was pretty cool.
Okay, so from your best to your worst.
Yeah.
Can you talk about one of the worst dining experiences you've ever had? And you don't have to name the restaurant.
Yeah, the worst, it was, I guess there's some amazing takeouts, as we know. But one day this was like last week. I'll just speak on my most recent. I'm like, I already knew when I thought about it, I was not going to be satisfied. But I was like, I am craving some really, really good Mexican food right now. So I do takeout. I didn't feel like, I love Mexican food. I love the culture. I love everything, you know, about it. I order takeout and I order like two tacos and a burrito. And I get it, and it was just the most disgusting. I took one bite. It was just, it tasted like the chicken was just tough as shit. The lettuce were like soggy. I had one bite. I called. I'm like, I need my money back.
Yeah.
Come get this shit. and then I just stuck to like a gyro, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that, I think, because usually, you know, when I go to places that are highly recommended or I know about, and so those are the places, so to like have bad food, it doesn't happen often, but
that's pretty lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't go out, I don't dine too often, like as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. When I first started. And so, yeah.
So when
I actually cook at least 4 nights out of the week.
Wow.
And so I could even say 5. And so, yeah.
So when you do go out, do you have any favorite places in New York that you tend to go to?
Yeah, I like the Chef's Table in Brooklyn is pretty cool. I mean, obviously, the Nomad. I love the Nomad because it's just very casual. And that's not just saying it because I used to work there. But booze, the cocktails are amazing. The food is just, you know, like you want a whole chicken, you got a whole chicken. What?
Don't they have hot dogs too?
They got the hum dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's not like, you know, a street hot dog. It's like a very high quality hot dog.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. I personally love the chicken burger. The chicken burger,
chicken burger is outstanding.
You got to try that. It's a chicken burger with, you know, the spices. It's wrapped in chicken skin. And then you have chicken skin fried that is like kind of like hasheed crunched and just put up top with some radishes. And it's amazing. Like one of these days, just pop in a bar, pop at the bar, ask for a chicken burger and a cocktail. You'll be like the happiest ever. Like, for sure.
I mean, I've tried to get in there once and it was like, it was a Saturday at like 7. See, so it was like crazy.
Yeah. It looks like billions when you like walk in there, huh? Like in the back, like elephant room is what they call it.
Elephant
room. Yeah. It's, yeah. Crazy.
Is there anywhere else that you tend to go when you go out to eat?
I really like to get, as much as I'm very deep in this Michelin high rated, you know, restaurant thing, I simply love good food, like comforting food that'll get me full. I have a friend, he has a spot called Hank's Juicy Beef, and that's like, you know, beef, like pulled beef, and he makes like a sub sandwich or a Philly cheesesteak
Where sandwich. Where is that?
That's like on by like 14th Street. I don't remember the exact location, but because when I come here, I just have this bad habit of just putting the address on my phone and just following. I don't like know when people ask me what's the cross street, what is it between. I'm like, here you go, here's the address.
You just give them your phone.
I'm like, here's the full address.
I have no idea.
And it's been like 4 years since I've been in New York. It's just something that I like. I don't know. I'm just so stubborn to like take note of, if you want to say.
Come on.
Yeah.
We're going to get you like a paper map We're going to take the phone.
That'll get me.
Give you a paper map. You got to direct yourself.
Yeah. That's some.
I think you could figure it out.
I can. Applying myself to it.
I'm curious what you think of, you know, we talked about Copenhagen and Amsterdam. What do you make of New York's dining scene? As someone who's worked in it, who's worked with clients in it, what do you think of it?
I think it's something that is very unique. You know, like all of these places that you go to, even in Europe, is they just cook with what it's their culture and that's what they're cooking. You know, you go to Japan, their main focus is to give you amazing Japanese food.
Mm-hmm.
Korea, same thing. Amsterdam, same thing. But in New York City, you could have anything you want at a high tier.
Right.
And maybe if you would say, what's the next spot? I would say perhaps Paris, because in Paris, you could find amazing Japanese food. And so on.
Yeah.
But with New York, it's very unique to its own kind. And you have to appreciate that.
Mm. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Mm.
Who is a New York chef that you can't say Daniel Hume.
Mm.
Who is a New York chef that you like keep up with and admire and really watch?
This guy, you will know him if you're like in a scene. His name is Brian Lockwood. He's like the CDC at 11 Madison.
Okay.
And with Chef Brian, he is like, you know, he's been in the industry for a while. He pretty much keeps a low profile, like despite of the knowledge that this guy has and just his like energy that he just confronts you with. But I really admire him because when I decided to jump back in the restaurant scene at the Nomad, he was one of the first chefs that, like, you know, I learned a lot from.
Mm.
And by saying that, it's like this guy's teaching you a dish you know, anyone else, they would be like, this is my dish. Make sure it's like, you know, bright and finesse it. But this guy just coming by and he's simply like showing you, this is how you do this, this is how you do that. And then 3 months later, you find out that this was his dish.
Mm.
And so it will just be small things like that that's so like humbling about the guy. And now that he's CDC at 11 Madison, that's what really like got me pumped to like go and
like, go work for him.
Just take all that knowledge from him, you know.
So for listeners, CDC is chef de cuisine.
Yes. Yeah.
Just to back it up a little bit. And
he's an alphabet what?
And my husband and I actually just watched the Netflix special about 11 Madison Park reopening.
Yeah. One of my close friends was, it's 7 days in,
yeah,
seven days out.
Yeah, something
One
like
of my
that.
Friends, it's very close friend, Alex Ersprung. He, remember the haircut scene?
Yes.
He's the one that was like talking, like he looks a little bald, and then Lockwood is the one with the, like the,
they all look so different like, when they got those haircuts.
Exactly.
Which is like, you know, it speaks to how intense that environment is, that like before the reopen, they took all of the chefs that had been working behind the scenes and made them get haircuts and their beards cut off.
I mean, even in the kitchen, that's just the rule. And when I came up with the team that I was going to work with at the James Beard event, I hold the same standard, like come in with your clean gray apron, you're going to be clean shaved, and we're going to look like we're going to look like, you know, a unison, like a group. And it's just when you start off like that, clean, fresh, it's just a better look. It's a better attitude to just, you know, maintain, and it helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So last question for you. If you could have your last meal in a restaurant, where would it be and who is invited?
I would have it at
Paul. It doesn't Bocuse. Have to be. Oh, okay. So a lot of people say that they wouldn't do it in a restaurant. They'd do it in someone's house or beach
but
or something.
I would invite. But that area, like, is just amazing itself. But I would do it at Paul Bocuse restaurant. I would have him there.
In Paris?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. In Paris, the original one. I would have him there. I would have Anthony Bourdain. I would have my family.
Mm-hmm.
I would have my family there, my dog.
Your dog is very cute.
He is. He's amazing. He's ravioli.
Right. It's a great dog.
Exactly. I would have him. I would have Daniel Hum. And I would have my last meal surrounded with the people that I admire and love in the from the culinary industry side to my personal life.
And what are you guys eating? What's on the table?
Good seafood fest.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, good seafood fest. You could have some gumbo if you want. And, yeah, like a massive, like, Viking feast.
A Viking feast.
Like, you know.
I just picture crab legs.
Like, long table, yeah. Crab leg, just a lot of beer.
Yeah, I was gonna ask what you're drinking.
I love tequila, but some good wine, like I love a good Bordeaux.
Okay.
And so, yeah.
I say have it all. Have some beer.
Exactly. You could have it.
Bordeaux.
It usually starts with a beer, then
tequila.
It goes with the tequila, and then I finish off as wine because I'm like, you know.
You finish with the wine.
I finish off with the wine. Yeah. I'm like, you know, be a little respectful.
Try to class it up at the
end.
Yeah,
be a little classy, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, definitely.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
For sure.
Are we talking like a dozen people, or are we talking 20?
I would say no more than 20.
No more than 20.
Yeah.
Oh.
15.
15, okay.
Yeah, 15.
Okay.
I would say not.
That's a good number.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming
on
the
show.
Thank
you for having me. Appreciate it.
This has been in the works for a minute, so mm-hmm. I'm happy we could figure it out.
I'm so happy we got to do it, and yeah, I love this space, this area. So great talking to you, you know, great vibes, and definitely.
And I will see you at EMP, hopefully.
Just pop by, yeah.
One of these days I'll just pop into 11 Madison.
The best spot, I think, is the bar, because... you don't need a reservation,
mm-hmm.
and I just, it's away from, like, you know, you're kind of like hiding in your corner, if you mm-hmm. would say, which I like. So, yeah.
You heard it here. Come into the bar at 11 Madison.
Yep.
Rose may not be there, but it's still a fun time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week on A Hungry Society.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.